Welcome back to the latest episode of the Cyber Sector 7 podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Reese, and in this episode, we have some very interesting things to cover. I am going to be going over what gear do you actually need when you start hacking. I go into depth in this a little bit this episode, so it's a little bit different. It stems from a problem I keep seeing where everybody just recommends a Raspberry Pi as the band-aid to fix everything and teach everyone everything. And so I kind of go into depth in this and break it down, what you really do need gear-wise when starting out, with some basics. I don't go way too in-depth on it, but I try to kind of point you in the right direction if you're new to the game and just kind of starting out. And then I also will go into several news articles, such as Jesus Christ, the greatest influencer of all time. So have fun, stick around, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Alrighty, let's see what we're gonna do. There we go. Can you guess a drink? Leave a comment if you can. Maybe go leave a DM if you can. But this one is a little bit different. This is a Canada Dry ginger ale. I have been sick. I had COVID these past 2 weeks, so this has been one of those things where I've just enjoyed drinking, and that's about it. It's soothing to the throat and the stomach, so I've been drinking a Canada Dry ginger ale. I'm also testing out some new mic equipment. I got the new arm, the new stand, new stabilizer, a sock for the mic, and this doohickey. I'll post a picture on my Instagram soon to show you guys. There's a picture in the Discord of this new microphone setup in the podcast discussion channel where I was talking to John from the What the Shell podcast about the equipment. If you guys don't know who that is, you should totally go leave a listen. I think he just hit 5,000 plays, so you beat me. But congratulations, and let's get on with the episode, though. I have some interesting stuff planned. So, I don't even know what I'm going to name this yet, but there's been a problem in the hacker community that I've been noticing. And it's been kind of, it's been kind of upsetting me. I'm going to be honest, it's been kind of upsetting me. So, if you go on YouTube right now and just look up how to start hacking, or where to start hacking, or what do I need to start hacking, you're going to be bombarded with a ton of videos that tell you to download and install Kali Linux. A lot of them will tell you this thing right here. Go buy a Raspberry Pi. It's super cheap, and you can install Kali to it and run it and have fun and do all sorts of fun little hacks and tricks. And if that's what you want to do, go for it. You know, that is a really fun way to do it. Personally, I have a Raspberry Pi. I have a 3B Plus. I love it. I've used it for all sorts of projects. As of late, it has been a NAS server. But I'm thinking about turning it into my little retro station. But getting off topic, it's kind of a problem, though. And you may ask, well, how is that a problem? They're beginners. You know, if that's what they're trying to learn, that's a great way to start. Yeah, it is, but it really depends on what they're trying to do. If you are kind of know what you're trying to do and you're trying to get into the hacking field, a Raspberry Pi may not be what suits you. So I kind of made a list here of different niches of hacking. Now, of course, I didn't cover them all, and I know some of you guys are probably going to hit me up and let me know what I didn't cover, but I covered a few of them here, and just understand that the premise behind this video is to kind of give the beginners more of a point in the right direction, rather than just having this fix-all, do-all, you'll learn everything you need to learn on a Raspberry Pi, with the main kit I see is just the Raspberry Pi, the LCD screen, It's like, I think it's 2.5 inch or 3.5 inch. I can't remember the exact measurement. But a little screen, you put it together with a little 3D printed case. You get a wireless USB keyboard. And then, let's see, you'd get a portable battery charger. Like a little, you guys know what I'm talking about. It's a little portable chargers. And then you're going to get a... like a wireless adapter, probably an Alpha is what people usually go with. I personally use the Panda wireless adapter, PA08 or something like that. Don't quote me on that. And I personally have really enjoyed my kit, but it's not a very beginner-friendly, this is what you need to do everything in hacking. As a matter of fact, with the money I spent on my Raspberry Pi setup, I could have bought a whole other laptop, a good just used ThinkPad. I think actually I spent just as much as I did on my Raspberry Pi setup as I did with my X230 without the RAM that I put in there. So I guess the point of this episode is not going to be, you know, saying that a Raspberry Pi is a do-all, fix-all, but kind of point you in the right direction. I'm not going to be giving, you know, a ton of specific products, but I'll try to point you in the right direction. So that way, if what you're trying to do and you're just starting out has nothing to do with a Raspberry Pi, you probably shouldn't buy one, and I'll try to point you in the right direction as to what you may need. With a lot of this stuff, you know, you actually don't need a whole lot of resources. And I think that's why a lot of people tell beginners that the Raspberry Pi is the way to go. And, you know, I agree. With a lot, especially like network hacking or just really learning tools and learning scripting, Raspberry Pi is great. It's a great little computer, and you can use it for a lot of different purposes, but it's not this great do-all, fix-all. And with the money you spend on a good Raspberry Pi setup, you could probably get something that's more suited to your needs. So I'm going to talk about that with a few things here. And like I said, guys, if I miss something, feel free to let me know. You can always join my Discord. As always, the link will be in the description, and we can chat there. That is the best way to actually get in contact with me, is probably on Discord or a Instagram DM. That's the best way. I'm not on Instagram as much as I should be, but I do a lot of posting there, and that's really the only two places I'm very active, and I'm somewhat active on Twitter. So if you guys do feel free to correct me, or you feel the need to correct me on some things, please go right ahead, and we'll talk it out there. But let's go ahead and get started here. So I wrote down, I said, what gear do you need to learn how to hack? Realistically, how do I determine what I need? And I'm going to try to answer that for you. So the first question I guess I would ask is, what is your niche? You know, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to do more network-based hacking? Are you attacking networks and testing vulnerabilities with that? Are you attacking wireless networks? Wired networks? Mainframe networks? I guess that sounds made up. But, you know, I'm just trying to get a feel for you here. Are you trying to do more on the OSINT side of things, or the research or the recon side of things? Are you trying to do web hacking? Maybe web apps, websites, things like that. Trying to figure, maybe do bug bounties with web application hacking. Are you trying to do hardware hacking? Are you trying to do maybe application hacking, if that's your thing? Maybe you're just writing scripts to automate certain hacking processes and processes. So maybe that's what you're doing. Are you phone hacking? Maybe you are testing vulnerabilities in the iPhone. Or maybe you are testing and rooting and creating custom ROMs for Androids. Are you game modding? That's actually something I'd love to start talking about in the show, is the game modding community. And again, guys, if I sound a little raspy or different than usual, just know I'm just now getting over COVID. I kind of just came out of quarantine. I'm sure my last episode, you could probably hear it starting up. But again, apologies. I may have just bumped the mic. Sorry. It's a new setup. Like I said, I will be posting on my Instagram the setup for you guys, or you can just go check it in the Discord. We'd love to have you. So let's get on this list. Just named these things off, so let's get to talking about it. So I started the list off with wireless-based hacking, like Wi-Fi hacking. If that's your thing, maybe that's something you're trying to learn. You can pretty much do that with almost any laptop. You could probably boot Kali or really any Linux distro in a VM. Or if you want to go like everybody usually goes, the Raspberry Pi route, that's a great way to start. If all you have is a Raspberry Pi and some computer equipment laying around, that's a great way to start. It's a great way to learn and get kind of a feel for the concepts and learning how networking works and learning how cracking hashes work and cracking passwords work or social engineering. That's a route you could go down, and a Raspberry Pi would be really good for that if that's all you have access to. I mean, and you could do a lot with a Raspberry Pi, like especially the new one. Like I think it's got that Raspberry Pi 4 has what?
4
gigabytes of RAM? Yeah. Which is, or 8? It's got 8? Don't quote me, but I think it has 8. Which is pretty cool. Not gonna lie, that's pretty cool. So, like I said, you could do a lot with it. Like, a whole lot with it. And especially, like, wireless-based and Wi-Fi hacking, that is a great go-to. And if you have your little kit you've built, the little portable kit, you could turn that into what I call the portapone. So it's just throw everything in a bag, walk around, and start poning Wi-Fi networks. It's like a war driving. But you could just be walking around and doing it if you don't drive. But I like the portapone. That's always fun route to go by. And that one kind of leads us into our next one, which is network-based hacking. So with network-based hacking, some easy low-level gear is really just any laptop with a Wi-Fi card and an Ethernet jack. Because you're kind of going to want to get a feel for both. You'll a lot of times find that the concepts are very similar. A lot of it's the same stuff. But there are a few differences, especially when you're going into a wired network versus a wireless network. And it's mainly the names of things, but the concepts are, for the most part, the same. And I know some of the network guys that are listening to this, or girls, are probably going to want to madly correct me on that. But just know, I don't do much with networks. That's not my niche. I play around with it occasionally, but that's really not where I'm deep into. But for that, you know, really any laptop with an Ethernet jack will do. Or the Raspberry Pi kit, that will also do what you're trying to get it to do. But yeah, you'll find that the concepts are pretty similar. But I personally would not recommend the Raspberry Pi for that unless you're on your home lab. The best way to use that concept, in my opinion, and I learned a lot about this in high school, actually, is to set up like a NAS server on your own home network, or even just a node, or just have it as a computer on your home network. Maybe put a password on it that you know, and then use your primary machine, which for me would be my laptop, to try to crack it and to try to get into that machine and maybe find a zero day, or maybe run a operating system that you know has a certain vulnerability, so that way you can try to pwn that vulnerability, figure it out, understand how it works, and get those concepts down. That would be the best way I could advise you on the network hacking side of things, if you're all on your same network here. And to me, that's just my opinion, and that's what I feel would probably be a good idea. Sorry for the squeak. It's a new chair. I just got a new chair. It's actually a very nice chair. But here, let's kind of transfer into our next one here, which is something, as most of you know me for, is OSINT. And I can personally attest to this. In OSINT, really all you need is a computer and a notebook and a reliable internet connection. I would recommend a fast internet connection if you can, but I mean, for years I was doing it on satellite. And if you guys know anything about satellite Wi-Fi, and I'm not going to give any names here, but there's really only a few companies that do it in the US. They suck. Like, beyond suck. So, yeah, that's... If you're trying to get into the OSINT side and the recon side and the researching side of security and digital security and the hacking culture, for me, really all I use is a computer and a reliable internet connection. I mean, shoot, half the time I use a Chromebook. I mean, I have Linux as my main operating system and what I do most of my daily stuff on. And then when I'm at work, I have to use my Windows machine, which I have my VMs there. But as long as I have a browser and some way to run Linux applications or Python applications and Bash scripts, then most of what I'm doing is pretty simple. I don't have to have a lot of heavy equipment. Now, I know some people in the community do have a lot heavier equipment, but for me, it's not necessarily needed. And I've been doing OSINT for quite some time now, and I can't think of a single time where I had to have extremely heavy duty equipment. What I do most of my OSINT on, most of it, with the exception of the small few things I use the Chromebook for, in this field, but what I usually use is my Lenovo X230 ThinkPad. I'm running 16 gigabytes of RAM and a Core i5. That's it. I think I paid $150 for it on eBay, and it works. I had to restore a few little things on it, and I think I put a new keyboard on it that I had laying around. But other than that, it does everything I need it to do. You know, you don't have to have a lot. Hackers are judged by their skill, not their hardware. Remember that while we talk about this. It's like, kind of like what John said in his last episode about Anonymous. He mentioned hacker elitism, and it's true. You know, in this community, we do judge you by your skills, your characteristics, and what type of person you are, rather than what tools you have and what hardware you have, because what is all that without skill? But that's enough for OSINT. Let's move on to this next one. Web hacking. Always fun, right? All right. So if you don't know what web hacking is, or if you don't know what the previous one is, OSINT, that's open source intelligence techniques. But web hacking is commonly referred to as web application hacking or website hacking or defacing or just finding bugs in websites. So with this, a lot of times you'll see a lot of bug bounties. This is one of the main things you see on stuff like Bug Crowd is web hacking and more web hackers. But it's like websites, web applications, Facebook, Twitter, that sort of thing, Instagram, not the application, but like the browser you know, use your computer. For that, and like I said, a lot of this I am not extremely skilled at. I try to learn and do a little bit of everything and just specialize in one thing. But for me, when I did a few web app CTFs, I'm not going to name them here, I just used the laptop I had here and didn't really need anything else. So I could see maybe needing a more higher processing speed. Maybe a better processor could have helped me. I probably could have done better with like an i7 or maybe something a little better than that. I know I had plenty of RAM, so that worked out fine, and I'm running DDR3 RAM. So from personal experience, could you do it on the Raspberry Pi? Yes. Would I? No. I would rather have the additional specs to do it. I can really see how in a lot of these web hacks, being able to have that extra set of resources can give you a upper hand. Could you do it on a Raspberry Pi? Yeah. Like I said, would I? No. I would probably stick to a more beefier computer. Because, I mean, granted, a lot of it's in the browser, but you're going to be running additional stuff on top of that. Like, for instance, you're probably going to be running Burp Suite. You're probably going to be running various scripts. You're probably going to have developer mode or options or whatever it's called on your browser. You're probably going to be doing a lot of editing. You're probably going to have a lot of extensions. So I would see RAM being a pretty important resource to have, which unfortunately the Raspberry Pi just does not really give us. So when it comes to web hacking, I'm going to give a big fat X for the Raspberry Pi. Everything else you could pretty much do that we've talked about on a Raspberry Pi, with the exception of some of the network-based stuff like cracking hashes if you're trying to get a password, that's going to take you a very long time on the Pi in reality. I know some of these videos you see make it seem like it's super fast, but a lot of that stuff is super simple passwords that they went ahead and pre-put in there and then put in the word list so that way it makes the video go by faster. So we're going to put an X on that, and I'll give a check, a thumbs up on the network and the OSINT and the wireless hacking, but with some limitations. The next one we're going to talk about is hardware hacking. Now this one's interesting, and this one kind of hits close to home because I grew up with my father just taking crap apart, putting it back together, and making it do all sorts of stuff. So with it, honestly, you just need a you could get away with any computer. Preferably, now this is going to be a little contrary, I would rather, especially like doing hardware hacking, if that's what you're doing, I would rather have a Windows machine. And a lot of you are going to say, oh my god, but Kyle, you said you would use Windows? Yeah, and here's why. Now, a lot of you Linux users are going to say, well, most of it's just plug and play with Linux anyway. And you're right, but with the exception that it isn't plug and play, and you're trying to take apart a piece of hardware or a device, and you're trying to figure things out, Windows, a lot of times, will have your back. You can easily find drivers, and it's sad, but most of the software that's made to interact with these devices, from the manufacturer at least, is Windows-based. And a lot of times you can't even find Mac-based software. So personally, if you're into hardware hacking, a Raspberry Pi will do it. If you can get Windows on there, there may be a way. Personally, I've never done that. But you may be able to. Now, one thing the Raspberry Pi does have, especially if you're hardware hacking, is it's got those... I can't think of the name off the top of my head. I think it's GPIO pins, which will be really helpful if you're trying to maybe diagnose something, or maybe you have your main computer out and then you have plugged up to the Raspberry Pi, which is then plugged up to whatever device you're trying to use, and you have your cables and it's just a big spider web. If you guys have ever done any hardware hacking, you know what I'm talking about, or even testing hardware out, you'll definitely know what I'm talking about, the dreaded spider web of cables. But a lot of that I found is pretty, it's much better to be using on Windows, and it's much better to have that Raspberry Pi with you to run some tests and maybe plug it at different things, see how it's working. Maybe you're building something with the Pi. I don't know, but the Pi gets a definite thumbs up, but I would not just have the Pi for that. I would definitely have some sort of machine for something cheap, maybe, that's running Windows that you can just pop a Linux VM on when needed, or maybe you're dual booting. That's up to you. Here's a fun tip for you, though. If you want cheap computer hardware, go to your local recycling electronics place, whatever you call it, wherever you're at. What I've done in the past and what I enjoy doing, unfortunately, we don't have a good one in my location where I'm at now, but at where I used to be at, we had a great one, and I could go in there and exchange things and pretty much get the stuff together to create a pretty gnarly computer out of a bunch of scraps. So if you know what you're doing hardware wise you could build you something pretty nice for, I would pay under $50 and have a whole PC build. I mean, and by far would it not be a beautiful gaming rig, but I mean, it would be a functional working computer that I could install whatever I needed to on and just have it. And a lot of times I would flip it and sell it, but unfortunately we're not there anymore, so I don't get to do that. But that's a little tip for you. I would like to let some of you know, if it sounds like my voice is cutting in and out, like I said, I was sick, but throughout this episode several times now I've had to pause it and go get something to drink. I have this ginger ale here, but I have to stop, drink, take a deep breath. It's just a nightmare. So apologies again for this episode. I'm sorry. It's just how things have been going. So, but please don't let that deter you. It's not usually like that when I record these episodes. But anyway, where were we? Hardware hacking. Yes. Okay, so we've covered that. The Raspberry Pi gets a thumbs up. But you're going to need some additional stuff. I would get an electronics toolkit. That'd be a pretty good little add-on. You can get them all over. iFixit has a great one. If you don't feel like spending the money at iFixit and you have a Walmart nearby, you can always go to Walmart and get one. They have a few great ones. Walmart, however, does not have a good soldering station. So you're going to have to go get a good soldering iron somewhere else. I got mine from HackerBox's, the online subscription, which is pretty gnarly. But I can't even solder anymore. But let's move on. The next one we're going to talk about is application hacking. Now, when I talk about application hacking, I'm not talking about web app hacking. I'm talking about Android application hacking, or even iOS application hacking, if you have the clearance to do that. It seems like iOS just wants more and more out of you, so we're gonna talk about, and I'm going to refer most of this in the Android hacking sense, as that's what I am familiar with. So if you're trying to hack Android apps, a lot of people are under this false notion that it's just as easy as like doing it just on your phone, and that'll be it. And with some stuff, it is. I will agree, it is pretty easy to do some stuff from your phone. By far, you're not going to get the proper experience and training, and I would even say exploits, hacks, things like that, if you're just doing it from your phone. What you're going to need is, and this is just from my personal experience, but something with a good CPU, a good GPU, and a lot of RAM. Because what you're going to probably most likely be running is several emulated Android ROMs, of course, on your PC. And you're probably going to be running those like VMs. That's how I do it, at least. There's tons of ways to run Android on your computer, but I just like to have the VM. And then you're going to be running, probably, I assume, Android Studio, which is a very resource-intensive, task-intensive framework for your system, whether it be Linux or Windows or whatever. Then you're also on top of that, any scripts you have on the side, any plugins you have, maybe you'll have a browser open at the same time. So when it comes to application hacking, it's a definitive, you're going to need a lot of resources. A Raspberry Pi, I'm sorry, maybe unless you have a cluster of Raspberry Pis, but unless you don't, I cannot see a Raspberry Pi doing it for application hacking. It's a very resource intensive skill set. I wish I was better at it personally. My wife is the queen of Android. She's sitting over there in front of the heater. It's very cold here. But she's but yeah, she's like the queen of Android and ROM hacking and application hacking, and her computer is a beast. So that's all I'm saying. And the little experience I have with it, I can honestly tell you, it's very resource intensive. If I try to run it on this X230 and do some of it, I can get some of it done, but a lot of it, the more resource intensive tasks, it's just not happening. I do not have the power to do that. So if that's what you're looking into, I would kind of not go there with the Raspberry Pi. That's not where the Raspberry Pi is going to be more suited. If you have like a gaming rig, that would probably work pretty well. Or maybe a higher end laptop, probably not this old hunker junker X230 I got sitting here, but I know I talk about it a lot, but it's a great laptop. It's my favorite by far out of all of these I have laying around, not counting the Chromebook. This next one kind of ties in with this last one. I kind of tried to put these in pairs, which is phone hacking. And by this, I'm talking about more on the ROM side, or maybe you're cracking phones or wiping phones, or even the hardware side of things, if that's your forte. The same goes with what we just talked about. You need something with some good resources, but I mean, if you're just installing ROMs or maybe working on ROMs, yeah, you're going to be probably wanting to run Android Studio, which is going to crash your computer a lot if you don't have a lot of resources built in. But if you're just installing different systems and testing different systems and testing things out, quite honestly, you don't need something that powerful. The Raspberry Pi, I wouldn't trust it to install a ROM to my phone, or even try to crack a bootloader or whatever you're doing. I would not trust the Raspberry Pi. I feel like the resources would bog down really fast and it'd probably end up bricking a phone. But other than that, I would say a good mid-range laptop. Maybe you can always find a good used Lenovo product for under $200. Or really under $150 if you know what you're looking for. And if you want to piece it together, you could probably get it for even cheaper. That's kind of what I did with this one. It needed a lot of work, but I just slapped stuff together I already had laying around. But yeah, with phone hacking, application hacking, they're both kind of the same. But if you're not really getting into the application side of things, or you're just installing ROMs and stuff, playing with different ROMs, not trying to really crack anything, probably don't need something too intensive, if really intensive at all. But don't go super lightweight to the point where you'll be right in the middle of something and then it's going to crash and now you have a bricked device. That's not what you want. I can tell you from experience, that's not fun. I think, didn't I do that with one of my phones and I had to get you to fix it? I think it was the Pixel, when I first got my Pixel. Anyway, I'm rocking graphene now, though. I got it working. And it's much easier now that they have that built-in web app that does it for you. But with those two, like I said, it's about the same. Except if you're just installing ROMs, you shouldn't need something too big. If you're building ROMs, though, that's another story. You're going to need Android Studio running at as many resources resources as you can give it, because it will crash fast. It will crash and burn, and it will be a nightmare. The last one I'm going to talk about here is a somewhat controversial one, but I'm going to count it. It's the game modding community. These guys, they do not get the credit they deserve in the hacking community, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it, so I'm going to count them in here. With the game modding community, that's G-A-M-E modding community, the word game. It sounds like I keep saying something else, but remember, I am sick. But these guys are great. You got hardware hackers, software hackers, all sorts of stuff. But I would say on the software side, probably something more resource intensive. Really, whatever it is, however many resources you need to run the game is what you're going to need on your build. On top of however or whatever amount of resources you're going to be needing to run your exploits. So that's simple math. Let's say my system has a requirements of an i5, minimum requirements of an i5, and 8 gigabytes of RAM to run this game, and whatever GPU. And then if you're trying to mod that game while you're playing it, you're going to need those minimum requirements plus whatever requirements you're going to have to run your exploits on top of that, or your mods or whatever. So that's kind of if you're modding the game itself. Now the console modding community, for the game modding community, they it kind of goes back to the same thing as the hardware hacking, same thing I talked about there, but they're all, you're also most likely going to need something more resource intensive computer wise because remember, you're probably going to be playing some of these games, and you may be bringing some stuff over and testing some stuff directly on the console from your computer. So, but I mean, you shouldn't really, if you're modding the console, need something too resource intensive, because remember, the game is on the console, it's not on the computer. But these guys, they get my respect in the hacker community, and that's kind of why I wanted to put this in here, because that's another problem I've seen as of late that I really wanted to kind of address with some of you. Let's start being a little more welcoming to some of these people. I've previously, actually pretty recently, seen some people bashing the game modding community as, air quote, hackers. You are in my book. That's all I'm going to say. And you guys are great. And all of you are great. Remember that. Every single one of you. You're all fantastic. Absolutely wonderful. The best. The greatest podcast listeners of all time. But let's go ahead and change things up a little bit. Now that we've talked about what we're usually going to talk about, I close the notebook. I prepare the Canada Dry Ginger Ale. And let's get on with the news. Alright, let's get on with the news. This is now probably my favorite part of these episodes, is doing the news. And as you know from that crazy intro we had, that this is going to be interesting. But before I start, I just want to let you know, none of this is has any sort of religious bias behind it. As always, I just find interesting articles and I talk about them. The links to these articles will be in the description, and if there's an article about Jesus in this, so if that may offend you or if that may trigger you, please just, this episode may not be for you, but if you don't mind that sort of thing, then we're going to go ahead and give it a listen. Personally, I'm not religious, but if you are, that's you. I don't really give a shit. So, this is an interesting article, and I'll start out with it. It's the one I kind of hinted at. I'm not going to clickbait you here. I'll go ahead and talk about it. So, this article was on Gizmodo.com by Mac DeGuerin. I probably butchered that, but whatever. There's a company called Glue who is using targeted advertising to figure out and determine the precise time and moment that users may be the most vulnerable to religious advertising and messaging. So essentially, I could read you this whole article, but I'm not. I'm just going to kind of summarize it here. The Colorado-based startup company, Glue, is using targeted advertising through Facebook and Instagram and most of Facebook's products to figure out what people's most vulnerable time and what their time of need is through and their algorithm, I assume, through their advertising algorithm that will then send people targeted ads about religion, such as Jesus. And I feel like this is a bit kind of shows you kind of how far down the rabbit hole we've gone with targeted advertising and just how bad it can be. But this is kind of very disrespectful to the religion as a whole. As I stated, I'm not religious, but even I can see this could be is very disrespectful to the Christian faith. But, you know, its whole aspect here is to sell you something. This just so happens to be a religion. Maybe they're trying to get that 10% a year out of your wages. I'm not too sure. But it sure does show that the church is really eager to grow and to get bigger and to get more people in. I would highly recommend you guys go give this article a listen. A read. It's a pretty interesting article. And it's interesting how they're using the algorithm to really find what your time of need is and what the best time would be to target you with religious advertising. It's kind of sad. Reminds me of the book Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. You know, religion in that book was used as a marketing tool. It's kind of sad. But it's what we've come to. We are kind of in that dystopian cyberpunk future now. Kind of in the early stages. And this is this sure shows it. This really shows it. This next one we have is pretty interesting. So a teen takes control of Teslas by hacking a third-party app. This is on Wired.com. And it's pretty interesting. I don't get to really see. It's not a really big article here, but it's an interesting one nonetheless. So a 19-year-old security researcher by the name of David Colombo, if I said that right, I think it's the same way you say Columbo as in, like, the old TV show. Great show. Great detective show, too. Watched it when I was a kid a lot. But essentially, he took control of Tesla vehicles, multiple Tesla vehicles, by a vulnerability he found in a third-party application that you could install to your Tesla. So it was not a flaw in Tesla software, but a flaw in a third-party application, which allowed him to do things like turn the car on and off, unlock the doors, blast music, and if I'm not mistaken, he could even drive, but there were limits to what he could accomplish. He could not, let's see, it says there are some limits to what Colombo could accomplish. He couldn't do anything in the way of steering or speeding up or slowing down, but he was able to garner lots of sensitive data about the affected vehicles. So I would go give that a read. That's pretty interesting. As always, links in the description. But remember, this kind of goes to show us that it's not always our system itself that's insecure. It's what we put on the system that can make it insecure. So I'm kind of a digital minimalist myself. The less I have on my device, the better. I try to containerize most things if I can, so that way it doesn't have that communication with other stuff. And something like this couldn't happen to our devices. Let's see, this next one we have is 213,000 Florida digestive health patients informed of the 2020 data compromise. So, this is the first time I'm hearing about this, but it looks like 212,509 patients and their data was potentially compromised 1 year ago during the hack of multiple employee email accounts for the Florida Digestive Health Specialists. So let's see, it was discovered on December 16th, 2020. After an employee reported some odd activity that they had found in their FDHS email account. It stemmed from multiple number of emails that were sent and not generated by the user. Let's see. So it looks like, what did we lose here? We lost, the data included full names, social security numbers, financial information, medical data, health insurance information, contact details, and individual policy numbers, diagnosis, and Medicare or Medicaid data. Let's see, the investigators did not find any evidence of any health information that was accessed or downloaded, but it could not be ruled out. So if you're in Florida, you may want to take some measures against that, if you had anything to do with that. Like I said, let's see, your Social Security was number could have been compromised. So if I were you, I would go ahead and put a credit freeze on there and monitor that very, very carefully. Like they're saying, it's not positive that it had happened, but they can't rule it out. So it was possible that this did happen. So remember, we don't know for sure, but it's always good to play the cautious game. I would rather be safe than sorry. Our next one is going to be our last one, actually. But let's see. Fin7 is targeting U.S. businesses with bad USB devices. So let's read into this just a bit here. So it looks like the FBI put out a warning about this. So it's Fin7, I believe I'm saying that right. It's a hacking group, malicious hacking group, has been targeting U.S. businesses with bad USB devices. So it looks like what they're doing is putting in a bad USB. If you don't know what that is, it's like a USB device that when you plug it in, it executes a payload. It's not like a regular USB flash drive, but it's made to look like a regular USB flash drive. So how these are used a lot of times is I could put a script on a bad USB, and let's say I want this to just open a reverse shell, or let's say I want it to just go into their browser and open up Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up. And so they pick up the flash drive, like, oh, hey, cool flash drive, I'm gonna plug this in and see what's on it, and then it does what I want it to do. It opens up Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up. That's what a bad USB is. It allows you to execute scripts on whatever computer it's plugged into, especially if it's got a certain vulnerability and maybe that USB is set to a certain vulnerability. Many times it's a zero day. But it looks like, it says here that the FBI had received multiple reports of packages laden with USB devices sent to U.S. businesses. So, let's see, researchers found that the Fin7 group targeted a U.S. defense industry firm in November 2021, and multiple other businesses. So, it seems like a pretty interesting method of doing it, just sending it in the mail from the looks of it. Yeah, it's saying here a package pretended to be from the U.S., Department of Health and Human Resources, HHS, and contain letters of COVID-19 guidelines and a USB. So that's interesting. There's a certain level of social engineering to this. I really like that. So they basically played on your need to follow COVID guidelines and regulations, and they played on the heartstrings on that and got them to plug it in. So remember, if you get a random USB and you weren't expecting it, it's best to just call whoever they're claiming they are. So this, it looks like they were pretending to be from HHS. So it would probably be best to actually just call HHS and ask them. And most of the time I see stuff like this, I just burn the USB. It's happened before. It'll probably happen again. I'll probably find these sorts of things. They're very common to be found in, like, Walmart bathrooms. People just leave them there, and people take them home, and then they'll get exploited. So, that's going to kind of conclude that. I'm going to go ahead and wrap this episode up. Thank you guys for listening. I hope wherever you are, you're having a fantastic time. I hope your year is going pretty well so far. As always, you're more than welcome to join me on Instagram and leave a follow there. The more the merrier. I put an announcement out that if I got 10,000 10,000 followers by the end of January. Now, this is a long shot, but I will do a face reveal. Probably is not going to happen, but hey, if it happens, you guys will see my face. Got to give you a challenge, though. The next thing I'm going to talk about here before I close is Discord is up, it is running, and it is ready for you guys. So if you guys want to hop in there, that is awesome. We have some awesome people there, like Tox. Tox, if you're listening to this, you made it into the show. He has been week by week so far this year, keeping us updated with his New Year's resolutions, which is interesting. And he's got some really fun ones in there, and I'm kind of trying to do some of these with him, so it's kind of fun. And that's going to kind of wrap everything up, though. So I hope wherever you are, you're staying private, you're staying secure, you're staying safe, and you're staying hacking. Take it easy, guys, and I will see you in 2 weeks. Oh, but before I go, there is official merch launched in my Linktree. It's just Teespring merch, but it helps the show if you guys want to buy some of that. It really does help the show. So if you guys are up for merch, go ahead. You can pick some up. If you'd like some custom merch, or maybe me to put it in a certain way, or take the logo and put it in a certain way, feel free to let me know, and I'll try to get it on Teespring for you guys. I'm just trying to help out, and hopefully soon we'll get a Patreon going, because I officially want to start doing this full-time for you guys and put a lot more dedication and time into it. So that's going to actually cover it all this time. I hope wherever you are, you're staying safe, you're staying secure, and you're staying private. I love you guys, and I will see you in 2 weeks.